So it's a usual work day. You've got the kids up and dressed, given them a good brekkie, porridge with fresh fruit, no added sugar. Then off to Grandma's to drop the kids before you go to work. You get there, say hi to your mother-in-law, kiss the children goodbye, and you're just about to head out the door when you see Grandma pour your eldest a huge bowl of Cocoa Pops. Do you say something or just let it slide? Maybe you can relate to one side of this scenario or the other. Either way, get in touch because we're taking your calls about differences between the generations with how to raise children, tension between parents and grandparents. It might be over food that they don't agree, or it might be about discipline. Has there been conflict in your extended family about raising the children? You can comment on Facebook. Dr. James Kirby is a clinical psychologist and lecturer in the School of Psychology at Queensland University. James, when it comes to conflict between parents and grandparents, what are the flashpoints? What types of situations cause tension?
Yes, it can vary from family to family, of course, but often a common difficulty that grandparents and parents can face are just the little things around what to do when the kids tend to be a little bit problematic out in public, for example, so going shopping. That can be a real instance of difficulty from both sides.
Why?
It's a case of firstly you're out in public, so there's an increased kind of attention focus on the situation, but also a sense of trying to resolve the issue potentially as quickly as possible. And sometimes grandparents can come in and try to help, and the parent sometimes can perceive that as interfering. Right. But even though the grandparents are trying their best just to help calm it down. And then there are other times where grandparents don't get involved and sit back, but the parents are thinking to themselves, why can't you just help us out? And so there's a really tricky balancing act to play there. And those sorts of instances can slowly build up over time. And you can have many of those instances in just a couple of hours together as well. And it can just start to grain on you if you haven't had enough sleep the night before or you're just under a bit of stress with work. Those sorts of things add to the tension as well.
Well, we are also joined now by Anu Krishnan. Anu's a parenting expert who works cross-culturally and runs groups for grandparents. Anu, tell us about some of your grandparents' groups. What's the purpose?
I run a lot of groups for grandparents who come from different cultures. And the purpose of the group is twofold. One is to let them know what the Australian way of life is like and why their children or daughter-in-laws or son-in-laws might have issues with the way they're raising their children, the grandkids, and also to kind of create a community atmosphere for them so they meet peers. One of the biggest issues with grandparents coming from overseas to help out is that they get quite isolated because they're away from their home countries and they're kind of homebound here. So just getting them in a group gives them that social connection as well. So a lot of the work that I do is with trying to mitigate that.
Well, James, I mentioned a couple of things like, you know, food, feeding the kids and also how to discipline them. That's where parents and grandparents may have quite different approaches also. How can you overcome these sorts of differences in your view?
Yeah, that's a million-dollar question, right? So, I mean, there are a lot of grandparents involved in care here in Australia. When I started my PhD in this area back in 2008, you know, it was one in every five, and now it's the proportion's increased to one in every four, so it's on the increase. And often it is around when they do provide care, grandparents in the family environment, it is on average around that 12 to 13 hours a week. So it is a substantial amount. And so in those instances, there's just constant opportunities for little things to become bigger than what they are, particularly around pickups and drop-off times when there are a number of different things going on at the same time. So it becomes really hard to know what is the best way of going about resolving it. And I kind of think it's sometimes not useful to think that there is necessarily a right or wrong way of managing it as well. There are just different ways of handling the issues. In some research we did at the University of Queensland, we looked at directly working with the grandparents, and we really focused on grandparents who were providing regular childcare, and we were more focused on looking at their role in that context as more of a secondary role. So trying to perhaps sit back a little bit more, talk to the parents when we are together, perhaps out in public, what would you ideally like me to do, as just a couple of little ways of trying to help ease some of the pressure and also increase some of the felt support between the parents and grandparents.
Well, Anu, what are some of the main sources of frustration that you hear that are raised by the grandparents in the groups you run?
The key frustrations are usually cultural and traditional. The kids are growing up here, so they have a very Australian way of life, so they might not particularly like the traditional food that grandma makes because they haven't had it very frequently. Parents often find themselves caught like the meat in the sandwich, where the children are saying, we don't really want to do that, but the grandparents are insisting some of the traditions be kept up. And it can, like James was saying earlier, build up over time. It's usually the small things and you let it go, but then you can't always do that. So those are some of the tensions that happen.
And James, you know, as we're saying, there can be different views and approaches to parenting between the generations. But can it also be sometimes that it's sort of like your buttons get pushed? So say my mum or dad does something with my kids that I hated when I was a kid. You know what I mean?
Oh, very much so. I mean, that's a terrific point and a great trigger. And so we've got a real closeness to our own parents. And so we're well aware of that when we rely on them for support. And so as Anu was mentioning as well, there's a tendency to try to just, okay, I know that's what they do. I know that's not something that I particularly enjoy, but they are helping me out significantly here. So I'll let it slide. However, there can be instances where if you just let it go and again and again and again, it can start to build up and you can explode or have a little bit of an adult tantrum, if you will, over the issue, unbeknownst to the grandparent, right? They're not aware that this is going on in the mind of the parent necessarily. Yeah. So it does make it pretty tricky. And also, when you talk about these things often, it can lead to this sense that I'm constantly being judged in terms of what it is that I'm doing. And that can come from both the parent's perspective and also the grandparent. And when that's there, that gives the sense that I am doing things in terms of right and wrong. And when we're coming from that perspective, it does make it quite stressful. Now, a lot of instances, it's not like that. Things go very well. There's good rapport. There's good relationship. There's just the ups and downs, as we always do in relationships, where little arguments are had or disagreements, but you get on with it and it's all good. However, there are instances where it can become quite problematic and lots of anger and yelling can occur, and that's when it doesn't go so well.
And if there's been tension in your extended family about how to raise the children, tell us about it if you'd care to. What's been the flashpoints for you and how have you gone about trying to resolve the tension? I'd love to hear from you on Facebook. Joining us now also, Michael McKenzie. G'day.
Hello. Food, after your Coco Pop scenario, it's obviously hit home hard. Let me read you a text and then we're going to go to a call. This text, I've had two sets of kids, all raised holistically and vegetarian. The first set I raised rigidly, and the grandparents would secretly feed them junk and meat, ending in difficulty feeding them at home. The second lot, I was much more relaxed with the rules for the grandparents, and they were less inclined to secretly feed them junk, and the children themselves made good choices. So that's interesting. Mm. And Luba is someone who was raised with no chemicals in food. Luba, what's happened since your daughter-in-law came on the scene?
Well, we had our own garden when I was growing up. So we had no artificial colour or flavours or anything. And my daughter-in-law, well, I have a grandson who's 19 months and is adorable. She's intellect and she feeds him sugar and chemicals and all sorts of things. And even any illnesses he may have, I might make a suggestion as to how to treat it naturally, and she just glares at me. So I've had to step back and respect her boundary and respect that she's a parent of my grandson.
Thanks, Luba. Anu, food, that clearly crops up often as an issue between parents and grandparents with the kids.
It certainly does. And I think for parents, it's most difficult because children are spending a lot of time with their grandparents and they can't really control, they can suggest, but not really control what the grandparent feeds them. And we also don't know how the grandparent is faring through the day. They are much older. They have other concerns as well. And it can be quite taxing if you've got a young child. One of the things that I usually tell all of my group members is to have a good open communication with the parents and try and see what boundaries you can place on the food that they're eating, just to make sure that the child has continuity. The child can't have different types of food different days of the week. So it just makes it easier.
Yeah, or different food rules.
In different homes, absolutely. The food rules are quite important as well. And also make sure that some of the things that were very fashionable or common 50 years ago, you aren't trying to introduce your grandchildren to them because they are going out and living today.
Mm. Well, let's hear now from Tara on the phone. Tara, your daughter came home from her grandma upset. Tell us about it.
Yeah, my in-laws are very strong Catholics and we're not. And the gay marriage debate caused quite a discussion at the house. And she's unsure about her sexuality, which her grandmother doesn't know. But her grandmother gave her quite a talking about, you know, why they were voting no. And, you know, it's just made it really difficult. I think that she doesn't really want to go back to her grandparents' house now. And I know that if I try to have a conversation, I'm worried that it'll end up being that we... because we've agreed not to talk about those issues between us as adults, but I hadn't really thought about, you know, the kids.
Interesting. James, what do you have to say about where there's political or religious differences between the generations? And, yeah, as Tara's saying, you might have resolved not to talk about them between yourself, but then the children, grandchildren, come into that scenario as well.
Yeah, I mean, thanks for the easy, difficult problem there. This highlights absolutely how there are so many aspects you just can't be prepared for or control for. And despite best intentions, and it very well may have been the case that the conversations were had that we keep this stuff off of the table. But at the same time, issues to do with perhaps marriage equality, for example, it's everywhere. It's hard to avoid not seeing it. It's in the paper, it's on radio, it's on TV, it's in flyers, it's everywhere. So yes, it's very tricky knowing how to manage this and deal with this. In these instances, what, again, we go to typically, particularly in our program that we developed at University of Queensland, Grandparent Triple P, what we usually do in these instances is this is a difficult situation. The situation we've been able to target, it's around this issue to deal with discussing political issues that we don't go and discuss. And then all of a sudden, this is propped up as a side issue to that because it's now involved the kids. Again, our role as the grandparent is to be a supporter role to what the parents are doing. You may have your own views, much like you, as a grandparent, you may have your own views about how things how things should go. However, you yourself perhaps also had those issues with your own parents when you were parenting yourself. So trying to remember that as well, coming back to that orientation. But again, trying to sit back and recognise, okay, take a supporter role. The parents have a different view on this. They are the parents. They are the primary caregivers here. I may have overstepped my mark. From the parents' angle, I do think it is a worthwhile discussion having. I mean, you can let it go. However, at the same time, that could be potentially invalidating your own moral code of the family. So, I mean, discussing that will be a tricky one. There's no easy way of having the conversation. However, you can have some ground rules around the conversation, how it goes, and if it does start to escalate, making sure we have an opportunity to slow down, pull apart, but come back together. That's important, coming back together. But it is a very difficult situation.
Mm. Sarah has typified this tension, everyone, with her mother-in-law. And she says, my mother-in-law criticised me constantly for, and there's a list, breastfeeding on demand, feeding my children dinner at 4 p.m. because any later they were too tired to eat properly, not brushing their hair every day. Sarah says, I responded very passive-aggressively, such as beginning to almost never brush their long golden locks. She outraged me by whenever she could give my babies a teaspoon of brandy at night because she said it was a tonic and to help them sleep. So there's some tension.
Well, Anu, you alluded earlier to possible friction with in-laws, as we've just heard there from Michael with that comment. And that's because, you know, you haven't grown up together. You know, there are different issues when you with the parents you've grown up with, but with the in-laws you haven't. What's a sensible, constructive way to take the heat out when it does get tense in that situation?
I think it's a little bit difficult when somebody is feeding the child brandy and you don't really want them to be. But no, I think seriously though, I think communication is the key. And one of the things that we have to recognize is that grandparents on either side have the best interest of the child at heart. And if you put the child at the center of this discussion, and I don't want to call it an argument or a conflict, but of the discussion, we have much better outcomes. And one of the things that we constantly try to do is try and de-stress the situation by pulling it down to the basics. What is that person trying to do? Are they concerned that the child is not being fed properly, not having enough nutrition, or not having enough discipline because they think the child might be growing up not understanding boundaries? So if we can discuss and address those key issues, usually the situation can be resolved quite peacefully.
But it gets to fundamental beliefs about, well, you mentioned cultural beliefs and customs, but also, you know, ideas about parenting run very deep, I think. Mm. You know,
yep.
You're really stepping on eggshells with that.
They certainly do. And parenting ideas are very deeply ingrained. And whether we like it or not, a lot of our parenting ideas come from, or beliefs come from, how we were parented and the values that we hold closest to our hearts. With cultural parents, one of the things that we do in our courses is to make sure that these grandparents who are coming from traditional countries, sometimes where so much freedom is not allowed, we try and tell them what's happening here in Australia. For example, what is and is not acceptable. So racism. You can get away with saying a lot of things in other countries, but here you can't. And we try and tell the grandparents that if you model these behaviors at home, your grandchild is going to get in trouble at school or outside. They may not be able to make friends. They won't be universally liked. And when we explain things in those ways to the grandparents, they do understand that it's not on over here. And similarly, we tell the parents that maybe grandparents need the education first on why you're doing certain things. Maybe you try and tell them how the food that you're feeding them is also nutritious enough. And just those little things to be taken care of on the spot before they escalate and you're like a pressure cooker just waiting to blow up.
This is Life Matters with Amanda Smith and Michael McKenzie and Anu Krishnan, who's a parenting expert who works in cross-cultural engagement, and Dr. James Kirby, a clinical psychologist, also at the School of Psychology at Queensland University. And if you'd like to join in this conversation, do comment on our Facebook page. Michael.
I was going to say too that if you have members of the family listening and you're worried they will recognise your name, you can always change your name. We don't mind. You can remain anonymous if that makes it more comfortable. So here's a couple of other things that have come out for people, and this is really stirring a bit of a honeypot here. My partner's stepmother cutting him down for telling our son to be quiet, sit down and eat his food. As a result, says Peter, spelled P-E-T-A, our son hasn't listened to his father since. So undermining the parent's authority in front of the child. And Anu, is that something that has come up for you ever?
It certainly does, especially in traditional patriarchal societies where the grandparents basically have ruled the roost in their home countries. And we do tell them when they come here that we need to recognize that the parent is the discipliner and the setting, and they set the boundaries, not the grandparents. And we always ask the parents to have the discussions without the child being present. It's not a good look to have a major domestic with the grandparents, with the children in the room, who are going to have such confused ideas about talking back, having arguments and all of those things, and conflict management, if they see their parents and their grandparents having a go at each other. With parents who have come here to help their children, they've actually made a huge sacrifice leaving familiar grounds. And often in arguments, this will come up. I have left everything.
Yes, I've left everything behind to come and help
you. Mm. And that kind of emotional blackmailing can set a very bad example for the young children who are like sponges, just absorbing everything that we are doing. And we don't want them regurgitating that 10 years down the track. So,
well, James Kirby, as well as the groups that Anu runs, there are courses that grandparents can do to learn how to be a grandparent. Now, that might sound like, well, it might sound like teaching your grandmother to suck eggs, really, but how do these courses work in practice?
Yes, just if I could, I'd just like to add a couple of further points here as well, because I think you're touching on a very important issue here. My PhD student, April Hong at the University of Queensland, she's looking at the relationship between grandparents and parents in Vietnamese families. So we actually have done some research with Vietnamese families, collected survey data of over 500 parent-grandparent dyads, and we'll be running groups in Vietnam later in the year. And what we notice is that there's a huge cultural issue, norm that we must take into account, and that is the issue of the grandparents are very much seen as the hierarchy, the top of the hierarchy. So in Vietnam, for example, 50% of family households have the grandparents living within it. I mean, that's a huge proportion to begin with. But then secondly, what usually happens is you move in with the parents, the father's parents. And so the mother who does most of the care is now working with the in-laws, right? But then the grandparents still run the dominant. They're the more dominant hierarchy, and that's a cultural norm which is valued in Vietnam. And so then often the mother has to be passive in that regard and has to submit to many of the parenting issues that the in-laws are putting forward. And as a result, the mother can feel quite isolated and lonely, but because particularly, and this is important, they can't really connect with their spouse so much because their spouse is the son of the in-laws, right, of her in-laws. So the loyalties lie within in that parent-grandparent connection, if you will. And so it becomes quite tricky. And the same runs here. And you mentioned this earlier, Amanda, like when your parents get involved, it brings up memories or triggers stuff from childhood as well about how they did things that didn't run the way that you would have liked. And so these kinds of things are constantly going on in all of the dynamics. And taking into account the hierarchical nature, and perhaps that's more magnified in a Vietnamese culture or Asian culture in particular, but those still exist here in Australian culture as well. And one of the interesting things we've found in our research also is despite grandparents knowing interfering causes a lot of annoyance to the parents, they still can't help themselves. They still think it's very important to let them know, no, you need to do it this way, and then I'll deal with the short-term pain, if you will. And so that's an interesting dilemma. And so that's something that we do try to tackle quite a lot in our grandparenting groups. When we're trying to deal with often this dominant submissive kind of element that can arise in the relationship, we're looking at applying a more compassion-focused approach in the program that we'll be running in Vietnam later in the year.
So, Anu, let's just put a positive spin on this as well. What are some of the ways that you encourage grandparents to forge connections with their grandchildren based on traditional cultural values?
One of the things that most parents and grandparents would like is for their traditional and culture and language to be kept alive. And there is no better way of doing that than fostering and encouraging the grandparent bond, because they're the ones who are the holders of
keepers
culture.
Keepers of the flame. Yeah.
Keepers of the flame, absolutely. So I always tell them it is now beyond a doubt that bilingualism is great. So keep the language alive. Speak to your grandchildren in the language that you come from. The food, tell them about the food. Tell them about your experiences growing up in a different country, because you might as well have grown up in Moon or Mars compared to how the grandchildren are growing up here. Yeah. So those things do forge a positive bond, and it keeps the happy memories. We all remember the happy times that we have with our family, so it's really important for grandparents to do that.
Anna, can I just jump in there and ask you, do you actually also endorse the idea that when children are of a sufficient age, that they actually get taught the food traditions because having done a food show and met some younger people from different cultural backgrounds, it skipped a generation,
yep,
and their grandfather or grandmother often would have taught them directly.
Yep. And with many migrant groups, they don't have, the parents don't really have the time in the first few years that they're setting up family here. They're working long hours. They're trying to make a life in a new country. So it's really valuable to have the grandparents without the stresses of earning a living to be teaching their grandchildren all of those things.
Mm. What about though, Anu, when the grandparents don't speak English and the grandchildren don't speak their grandparents' first language?
It's the best way to learn the language.
Yes, but I imagine that also can cause some tensions and disconnections.
It does, but when the children come to their grandparents from a very young age, they do form a way of communicating which transcends the need for a common language. And the language that the grandparents speaks, the common things that they say do get embedded with the children, and they remember that. And they do, especially many cultural groups, actually actively send their kids to language schools to pick up the language. One of the things that I always tell the people who attend my group is that the largest number of calls to kids' helpline, one of the top five, is family relationships. And in 2015, I think, was the last stats were from, about 34% of the calls that young children made to the helpline were about the issues they were having within family relationships. And it just highlights, even if the children are not articulating to their parents or their grandparents, they are calling somebody on the phone asking for support, and family relationships matter a lot to them. So the grandparents and the parents have to model the right behaviour and create those happy memories for the children.
Well, let's go to a call. And Robbie, you've had the experience of being raised by your grandparents.
Yeah, I have.
Tell us about it.
Well, you guys were just talking about culture. They were Eastern European. They were from Hungary. So they weren't very good, obviously, in their English speaking, but I predominantly spent most of my life being raised by them, which I wanted to say was a very positive experience for me. And although we talk about, usually we think from their background, they would have been more conservative and, you know, culturally, they were actually very open-minded, because I went through my punk rock phase and all that. And, yeah, I mean, that would have been confronting to them a bit, but they embraced it. So they're very progressive, actually. So I know we think that grandparents can be conservative, but, yeah, it surprises people how adaptable they are over time.
Well, let's hear now from Yvette, who's also called in, on a similar sort of theme, that sometimes the grandparents can be more progressive than the parents. Yvette.
Oh, hi. Yes. Actually, no, my grandparents were more conservative.
Oh, okay.
But it was interesting. My mum was interstate for work, and I was in primary school. My grandmother called. We were having a chat, and she just took the opportunity to have a sex talk with me. And it was totally...
Doesn't sound conservative?
Well, it was totally out of the blue. And she sort of suggested that she thought it was a good idea not to have sex before marriage. And I was like, uh-huh. And then I brought it up with my mum sheepishly, like, so grandma said this. And my mum was like, right, well, yes, your grandmother told me the same thing. And I listened to that, but I don't think it's a good idea.
I see.
Let's go to Joe now. And Joe, for a while, you were bringing your son up in Thailand.
Yeah, in a small village community, which were my in-laws. So my husband's Thai. So it was an interesting... It was my first child, so I was very quite anxious and, you know, keen to do the right thing, but they had very different views, and I became like a source of amusement for them. So they'd come around and watch what I was trying to do. Look, how she's bathing the baby! And they'd invite people to watch, and it was quite stressful, but I had to really fight to not get too upset and keep my sense of humour, or else it could have been awful.
Well, I think that's probably good advice, Joe, too, to, through all this, somehow try to keep your sense of humour and keep some perspective on this. Thanks to you all for your calls. And also thank you, Anu Krishnan, a parenting expert who works in cross-cultural engagement. It's lovely to have you with us, Anu.
Thank you.
And Dr. James Kirby, a clinical psychologist and lecturer in the School of Psychology at Queensland University. Thanks to you, James.
Thank you.
Amanda Smith with you, along with Michael McKenzie. And Michael, you're going to be back later with the next digital detox challenge for
us. Challenge number three.
All right, look forward to it. This is Life Matters.